Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. This is part two of our talk, Artificial General Intelligence, the Machine Element, with my returning guest co-host and contributor today, R.D. Palmer. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome back. It's so good to be back here in Detroit. Last week, I was out traveling. For those of you who know, I was in Colorado, and I was podcasting my good friend Lynn Donovan's book, which came a play in the lovely city, Canyon City, Colorado. It was a great time there, but so glad to be back. I want to thank Dr. Mike Spalding for guest hosting my show last week called Men in Love. It was about romance, love, marriage, and all the things in between from a male's perspective. So if you did not have a chance to listen to that show, simply go to their archives here. You can definitely just click on that link. It was interesting because I ended up talking to a lot of men and getting their idea of what love meant to them. It was very important for me to highlight the male perspective. That's why I didn't even say anything in the show. It was totally for the men, by the men, and of the men. So that was a really good show. I got some great feedback from my listeners out there, so I'm so very happy that you enjoyed that show. And as always, I want to invite you to donate to Elizabeth Chalker's GoFundMe cause. She is trying to get a home safe from mold and toxins. After many years of being misdiagnosed, she finally got the right diagnosis, a safe place to stay, and she needs your help. So simply go to my Facebook page and click on the GoFundMe link and see about giving and donating as the Lord gives you direction. You don't have to give a lot, but every little bit helps. And also, for those of you waiting, my book, House of Hathaway, will finally be available next week. I'm putting the finishing touches on it now. You know, this is a new genre for me, so I'm a little leery, but guess what? It's going to be okay, as I've been told. So I'm really excited about that. So that'll be coming out next week, right before February ends. For those of you who want to join in on the conversation, you know you can. Call in at 929-477-1965 and press that 1. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break, and we'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Jesus said, "Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you received, freely give." Listen to our internet radio station at touchofgodradio.org, where you will find out your true identity in Christ. You can use the light that is within you to replace the darkness in this world. Go into all the world today with touchofgodradio.org.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity, or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. Our topic today is Artificial General Intelligence Part 2, and we're talking about the machine element. And this is very important for our time today because we're so dependent on artificial intelligence that we have to ask ourselves the question, what if we create artificial intelligence that surpasses human intelligence? And with me to talk about that is my good friend R.D. Palmer. He is a former technological professional as well as the author of the book called The One. It's a wonderful mishmash of Amish fiction versus dystopian. So some of you hear me go, Amish fiction, dystopian. You may see that that contrast there, but that's why this book is getting such rave reviews, because he takes the premise that there is something called artificial general intelligence. And the week before last, on February 9th, we discussed what artificial general intelligence looks like and what that means for us as human beings who create this artificial intelligence. We talked about what artificial intelligence is. We talked about what a quantum computer is, and we also responded to your questions and comments. So if you did not get a chance to listen to that part, which is part one of the series, make sure you just go through the archives and click on AGI Part 1, The Machine Element, because there's a lot of information for you to dig your teeth through. And RD, once again, thank you so much for being with me on the show. Just ready to tackle this topic again, but I want to reintroduce you to people who may not have heard of you. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Great. Thank you, Parker. It's a pleasure being with you and with your audience. So just a little bit of background about me for those that may have missed it, as you said a couple weeks ago. So I've worked in computer field both from the hardware side and software side for all my life. I've worked for largest hardware companies. I've worked in robotics where I've written code for robotics. I've even written some software to where it allows for the combination of pulling in data. This is many years ago, data from the outside. It was for a hardware company asking questions and being able to match that to pictures and then being able to drill down specifically where we were going. One of the things that was interesting is as I was working for one of the world's largest software companies, and again, traveling throughout the United States, and I've traveled in many countries too, but we provided many software solutions, a portfolio, if you will, for different companies to help them run more efficiently. One thing that I didn't tell your audience here 2 weeks ago, but it's kind of, if you will, one of those strange things. One of the portfolio products that we had was what's called a portal. And again, this goes back in time. So it pulls data from inside the company, the intranet, as compared to the internet, and pulls data from the outside. And I can remember my father-in-law. So my father-in-law, he's now passed and with God in heaven. He says, "Where are you going this week?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to go meet with some people from Mars, and I'm going to talk to them about the portal." He was really confused. He said, "What do you mean you're going to meet with people from Mars?" And, well, it's Mars, the candy bar company. So, you know, the Mars people and portals. So it was really confusing. So when we get into the computers and the terminology, a lot of times it can be confusing. But in a way, it's kind of funny with reactions from people, too. But anyway, so I've now retired. Went through early retirement to the company I work for. For those that are familiar with software companies, they wanted to look hip, and so that terminology of being hip, they really wanted a younger audience, which was fine for me. What they did is when I was 60 years old, they asked if I would retire, so gave me an early retirement package. So my heart and soul has been in technology. I've been pro-technology all my life, pro-science all my life, and but what's happened, I guess, is actually since that time, and more towards the latter part of my career in technology, I've seen a change both on the Internet. That change actually mirrors what Tim Berners-Lee, who's the inventor of the World Wide Web, what he's espoused back in the 2018 last year, which you had mentioned, Parker. I released my book, and there's things that's in that book, which is interesting because I come back in January of 2019, and Shoshana Zuboff, who is a Harvard professor, and she wrote it's Capitalism, Surveillance Capitalism, and it became a number one bestseller. And I had things in my book just because of the fact that that was what I was observing. So, and I don't think that this should be a surprise for your audience, or most of your audience for sure. Maybe all of your audience is certainly aware of this, but there's surveillance that goes on with computers, computer companies. They're watching what you're doing on the Internet. That's how artificial intelligence works, right? So you go off over to a place where you're wanting to buy something, and they say, "Hey, we know that you bought this in the past. We suggest that you also take a look at this." So it's very common with what is happening today. So I've taken a look at where things were changing as far as on the internet, and I also was taking a look at as far as how things were going with artificial intelligence, which, again, I'm pro-technology, and I was starting to see a shift, and with that shift, I said, hey, I think that there's some reason for concern. And those reasons for concern, for example, I see that there's people such as Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates and Elon Musk, and all of these people are raising concerns about what's called artificial general intelligence. So I don't know if you're hearing a little bit of buzzing on your side, Parker, but I'm hearing it on my side.
Oh, I don't hear anything at all. I don't hear any buzz at all. So I'll just go ahead and continue, and we'll just we'll deal with the technological difficulties as they see fit. So go ahead, keep going.
So what I was saying is that, you know, there's people that are, I'll call them, a lot smarter than me. You know, I mentioned Bill Gates, Elon Musk. You know, because of DeepMind, of the, when I say DeepMind, these are projects, programs, if you will, that's dealing with artificial intelligence. I think that there's definitely hope. There's a lot of hope that we have with artificial intelligence, but very famous people and very knowledgeable people are saying, hey, if we don't get this right, then this could be very dangerous. As a matter of fact, it was in December of 2018 that the chief executive officer of Google, that he came out and he said that artificial intelligence, now, of course, we have artificial intelligence today. Again, go back 2 weeks on our interview, we were talking about the difference between narrow and AGI or specific intelligence and AGI. But anyway, so the chief executive officer of Google, he specifically said in an address to Congress, he said that artificial intelligence could very well be a greater invention than fire or electricity. So this holds a tremendous amount of potential. But in that thread of that potential, there's also a tremendous amount of risk. And that's what we do have a number of people that's looking at this risk. It's not saying that, hey, we're trying to go into this blindly. I'm looking at it from a technology side as well as I'm looking at it from a Christian side. And I'm saying, hey, there's reason to be concerned. Not that I'm aware that a whole lot of us can do anything except for, you know, we're talking about it on radio, we write books, maybe we talk to congressional representatives. But that's the purpose, I guess, a key reason of why I wrote the book. It is a fiction book because of the fact that it deals with things that's happening in the near future as compared, and it takes events that's happening today and pulls it in the near future. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of background about me.
For those of you listening in, again, we're talking to R.D. Palmer. He is a former technological professional. He's done a lot of things in technology before. Most of us may have understood some of the things going on. So he was doing punch cards, and I can't even begin to understand what that even looks like because I saw a stack of punch cards on Google, and I said, that was a program? You know, you're kind of sitting there like, how do you – you know, it doesn't make sense to me. So we did talk about the last show. We talked about what artificial intelligence was, what a quantum computer is. And so those are some of the terms we talked about as well as responding to your questions and comments that you sent in. Continue our discussion. And so the next thing I want to discuss with you, R.D., is what is or what do we mean by the term singularity? Go ahead and expand on that for us.
Yeah, that's a good question, Parker. So this is a term that's quite widely used, and it's actually borrowed from astronomy. And I believe that the person that borrowed it or took it from astronomy is Ray Kurzweil. And he is a big proponent, and I listen to him quite often, and he's been a very interesting guy. And he's even got the Singularity University, Singularity website, Singularity University. But so if you take a look at it from the astronomy side, what we're talking about is black holes, for example, right? And it's where the density of a mass, it becomes infinite, and yet there's zero volume. So that's where, in astronomy, that's what we're talking about. So they use that term, we're using that term here on the software side, specifically saying that at a point in time, that machines will become smarter than humans. So that one of the things as humans that we look at ourselves, I guess, as compared to other animals, is we look at our intelligence, right? And with our intelligence, we say that this is what separates us. And we take a look at, obviously, through history and see how our technological advances or helping us in things such as that. We believe, going even back to what the chief executive of Google says, that now with artificial intelligence, that what's going to happen is that we're going to invent something that's going to be really the last invention. So, for example, the United Nations chief technologist mentioned that once we have AI, or specifically AGI, artificial general intelligence, that it will be doing all the inventions from here on out. And the reason for that is because we take a look at knowledge. If you take a look at knowledge on a graph or a spectrum, what happens is that we certainly believe that there's a lot more knowledge, a lot more discoveries that's going to occur. But if we have a computer, and today computers can run, because they're silicon-based, they can run millions of times faster than our organic brains. So just think about how fast, once we get up to human brain capacity, how fast that we're going to be able to create new inventions. So that's really where we're going. So with Ray Kurzweil, and the singularity, it's at a point in time that the software will become smarter than humans, and then that what will happen is it will accelerate. Now, people have said in the past that, well, at that point in time, then what we're going to have is we're going to have computers that are going to be writing its own software. We already have that. We already have computers that write their own software to make themselves more efficient. So, but what we're talking about is and that's called Deep Coder, for those of you that Microsoft does work on that, University of Cambridge and stuff such as that. So when will this happen? Nobody knows for sure. I mean, we've got very pro AI people that says, hey, within the next 15, 20 years, it's going to happen. And other people I listen to them and they say, hey, it's not even going to happen this century, or if it does happen, it will happen at the end of the century. So we don't know that it's going to happen. However, what we do know is that all the major companies have included, all the major software companies have included that artificial intelligence is a core of their technology, and they're pushing it, as well as we have governments, specifically governments here in the United States. We have governments over in Asia and somewhat in Europe, not so much, but Europe's definitely involved. But we have a lot of people, literally thousands of people, that have invested their lives in making this artificial intelligence, AGI, a reality. So that's where we are with it. We don't know when. But I think that everybody is not only hopeful, such as what the chief executive officer of Google is, but it will come. We just don't know the date. So hopefully that explains a little bit about singularity.
And we're talking today to R.D. Palmer. He is a former technological professional, as well as the author of The One. And this book really delves into what the danger is of artificial general intelligence and how it can affect human life as we know it. Though told in a dystopian slash almost fiction way, so you got two genres coming together, The One really peels back the veil on what makes us human and why humanity is so unique in God's creation and why we need to be concerned about artificial general intelligence. So I'm going to invite you to make sure you pick up a copy of The One by R.D. Palmer, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break, and when we come back, more with R.D., Artificial General Intelligence, and the Machine Element. Stay tuned.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then AuthorShout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at AuthorShout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by AuthorShout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Hi, is your book club in need of some fresh and exciting questions to ask club members and authors at your next book club meeting? Literizations, the book conversation game, is 70 thought-provoking questions to really get into an in-depth discussion about the books you and your club members are reading. These questions really get into the characters, the storyline, and into the author's head. These questions may just give you and your book club members a whole new way to get into a new conversation, a literization. Literizations is also a great set of tools for bloggers, interviewers, and authors to use a discussion question. Are you ready to get lit? Please visit our website at litversations.com, LITVERSATION.com. And please like our Facebook page at Simply Said Reading Accessories. Thank you.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. We are talking about artificial general intelligence. This is part two of our discussion. We're talking about the machine element. Part one was aired on February 9th, so simply go through the archives, click on that to get up to speed, because there's a lot to this topic. And so this series is an educational series to let you know why you should be, first of all, aware, educated, and concerned about artificial general intelligence. This does not mean that we are not pro-technology. That doesn't mean that. What it does mean is that we need to be aware that there are certain ramifications for not having boundaries for our own genius. And with me to discuss that is R.D. Palmer. And R.D., once again, thank you so much for being with me on the show as we continue our discussion about artificial general intelligence. I want you to talk briefly about Alan Perils. Tell us a little bit about him and what he's all about.
Yes, thank you again, Parker. Again, glad to be back with you. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about, you know, where this whole artificial intelligence began. So it began with Turing, so Alan Turing. So he was the guy that said, you know, that machines could learn to be intelligent. So that's the whole artificial intelligence. And for a number of years, I think it's been since the 1960s, we have had what's called the Turing Award. Turing Award is specifically to recognize people that advance artificial intelligence, right? And so there's a professor by the name of Alan Perlis, and it was interesting because in 1982, he wrote that a year spent in artificial intelligence is enough to make one believe in God. So what an amazing, and here he is, he's a professor, you know, at Yale and a professor at Purdue and stuff such as that. And there are, if you will, there's five categories that we're taking a look at for artificial intelligence, right? And it's reason, motion, perception, language, and learning. So we say, can this software, can it reason? What is its motion, perception, and how can we bring that up to human state or beyond? So just to give you some you and your listeners some example on the reasoning side, right? So we know for a fact that we have software that can read all the books and stuff such as that, but can it reason? So it's been about a month or something such as that ago that IBM announced what's called a private debater. So it's an artificial intelligence, but specifically what it does is it debates in whatever language, but the English language, and it debates people, right? So you have world-class debaters, and what they do is they put together a premise, and then the artificial intelligence, in this case private debater, puts together a premise and counter-arguments and going back and forth. So that technology already exists, and the reasoning capabilities of being able to pull. So what happens is that with private debater, they not only position, and they're, of course, are able to pull from thousands of books, you know, to here's what the facts are. But in addition to that, they listen to what the opponent says, they interpret what that opponent is saying, and then brings up a counter-argument. That technology exists with private debater, okay? Now, motion. So when we're talking about motion, you know, of course, we've got limbs and, you know, our legs move, our hands and things such as that. Well, there's technology such as that. One of the big ones is what's called Boston Dynamics, and I think it's called Atlas. But so anyway, we have robots that are untethered. They're not connected to anything. They can see objects in front of them. They can jump. They can actually do backflips. They can pick up machines and boxes and move them around and things such as that. So that motion exists today. perception mm-hmm. side, certainly from artificial intelligence, and we've had this for quite some time, is we've had facial recognition, the ability to where you can give a computer, here's a picture, tell me what's in that picture, and it will tell you. Or, you know, for example, today we have searches to where you can put in text. You can also take a picture, and then you can put a picture into that search engine, and it will tell you what that is, tell you, what, for example, mm-hmm. the location. On the language side, certainly on the private debater, it can speak. In addition to its speak, it's listening. But in addition to that, certainly we have the capability to work on the language side. It can speak in whatever language and understand those languages. And the last of the five is what's called learning. So we take a look from children on, you know, we educate the children and we give them, we read books to them and stuff such as that. And we're actually going through this process right now. We don't have to where we have artificial intelligence as an adult. We're going through that childlike stuff stage to say, what is this? And that's where we have this narrow artificial intelligence or artificial specific intelligence. It is learning. So what we do is we set up a process to where the machine teaches itself. So that technology, I just wanted everybody to be aware as far as the foundation that exists. And I also thought that it was interesting that Alan Perlis, who is a chief proponent certainly of this artificial intelligence, he says that if you spend a year in AI, that it is enough to make one believe in God. And that reminds me of even going back to Psalm 139, which says that I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. So that's how we are made, and we're in the process of making something similar to that. So thank you for that question, Parker.
I think it's a really good question and a good answer, too, because I was listening to your explanation and commentary on that. I said it's almost like an animal, like you are creating life. And so that's why I call it artificial intelligence, because you have a dog that learns, you have a dog that moves, a dog that reasons and perceives certain things, just not on the same level as we are, you know, just not on the same level. And so the problem is that if you create artificial intelligence, it does the exact same thing, but better, then you have to wonder, will something that's better than you eventually enslave you? And that's one of the premises in your books, The One, which is available for our listeners on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And let me tell you, it's getting rave reviews, and there's a reason for that. But we won't get into that yet, because I want you to go ahead and pick up a copy of that book, because RD is going to be back later on this year to just solely discuss his book, and we're going to delve into that on Tuesdays. So let's go into a little bit about contrast and thoughts of contrast here. What mm-hmm. would you say is the okay, so when it comes to artificial intelligence, people view it different ways. So how does the view of artificial intelligence differ from a Western point of view as opposed to an Eastern point of view? We'd love to get your thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's quite a bit of a difference. I've been in China. Well, specifically when I say China, I was in Hong Kong. So I was, of course, mainland China has now absorbed Hong Kong. But so I'm a little bit familiar with what's happening in China. I'm not certainly the expert anyway, but I do know for a fact that there are differences in the way that we perceive it here in the West as compared to the way that the Chinese perceive it. And specifically what happens is in China, it's a very top-down heavy approach. And when I say top-down, it's government approach.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go back in 2017, so just a couple of years ago, China launched a new generation artificial intelligence development program. In that program, what they said is that they wanted all the companies, even from certainly their very large companies, technology companies in China, they wanted all of their companies to incorporate artificial intelligence. Well, government, because of that, 85% of the companies in China have an active, they become active players in artificial intelligence, whether it's in the mm-hmm. use or trying to incorporate it and stuff such as that. If you compare that to the West, we only have approximately, and this is according to Boston Consulting Company is what it is. This is where I got the data. So we compare this result in the West to about 51% of the companies looking at incorporating artificial intelligence. I also look at it from a talent side, okay? So, of course, there's, you know, China. And what happens is in China, they literally start grabbing, might be too strong a word, but let's say identifying very bright young ladies, bright young boys. And what they do is they start to groom them to help them to build and nurture them into a career in artificial intelligence. We do not do that here in the United States. You know, it's, you know, what is it that you want to be, you know, and then you go do that. And it's interesting, and I personally consider this quite refreshing. In the United States here, we have quite a number of what's called H-1B. So if you go to the high-tech companies, I should say more specifically. So that we have four nationals that come over, right? So I don't want anybody to think that the United States, or if you're an American, that you've got the brain power, because I don't see that as the case. It's a worldwide thing, and with a worldwide thing, of course, there's people that are very intelligent in Europe and stuff such as that. Here in the United States, what happens is it's because it's not government push, but it's more company push, is that money attracts people. And I'm okay with that because I'm a capitalist. But what happens is that we pull people from IIT, which is India Institute of Technology, you know, similar to MIT here in the United States. So we pull people from there to help develop that. Now, that's from a government side, personnel side, but you take a look at it, there's a difference on the military side too. So from a Chinese perspective, they're very, very pro for artificial intelligence. Matter of fact, they've already announced that they put artificial intelligence in their drones. Now, if you can go out and if you want to use whatever your favorite search engine is and take a look at the Chinese drones, they're actually copies, or, well, I say copies. I look at them and they're very similar to the United States Predator drones, right? So I kind of wonder, you know, how did you get the design so close? But anyway, the difference is that their drone, they're using artificial intelligence, and they have their drones firing missiles. The artificial intelligence is doing it as compared to here in the States, it's doing it. Also, the difference on the military side is that in the United States, for the most part, that what happens is that there's a resistance from people to say that they want to participate in military programs. Okay, and I understand that. Again, in China, it's actually an honor. It's an honor to be involved in that. Now, here in the United States, there is a department, or not, I shouldn't say department, organization. It's called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. They do siphon, if you will, personnel and take a look at the artificial intelligence. So there's development of artificial intelligence that's going on in both areas. I do say that that China has its both positives and negatives, in that, but because of the fact of their bureaucracy and the way that they handle things, and they're pushing in their, I'll call it, obviously they've got very high talent. They make mistakes. So all of us make mistakes. But here's some examples that I know that did happen in China. And a couple of weeks ago we talked about Facebook and chatbots and stuff such as that. So on the chatbot side, China had a couple chatbots. One was called Baby Q, which was a penguin, the avatar, right? So you go out and you take a look at Baby Q. And the other was what's called Little Being. Little Being was a little girl. So you could chat in China with these bots. And one of the chats was that long live the Communist Party. Well, if you're familiar, we talked about this previously, how artificial intelligence works, right? So it's not necessarily rule-based. What's happening is if you're picking up, because it's narrow AI, you're picking up all this information that's on the internet, you're pulling it in, and you're trying to make sense of it to give a response, right? And that's why, as mentioned a couple of weeks ago, these chatbots, they start speaking in a different language. Well, these chatbots, for example, Baby Q, where the comment was from an individual, long live the Communist Party, Baby Q responded back, do you think that such a corrupt and incompetent political regime can live forever? When the Chinese government found out about that, they shut down Baby Q. And on the Little Being side, so a person said, is democracy good or not? So it's just a question, right? And the response from Little Bing was is that there needs to be democracy. Well, the Chinese government has shut that one down, too.
Yeah,
so,
can't have that.
So there's slips and slides on each side. So a military side, I see definitely some advantages, you know, as compared to here in the United States. They definitely have a tremendous amount of talent, but there's pits and falls. Now, if you take a look at Eric Schmidt, who is the founder of Google, and then he's actually over Alphabet, right? So Alphabet owns Google. So he's actually testified several times that, hey, you know, if we don't do something here in the United States, that what's going to happen is that China is going to surpass us. And he might have an ulterior motive, you know, to get some money for Congress. But anyway, that's what he says. And that if you compare China and the United States, they're the closest in artificial intelligence. You work with companies off over in Europe. Certainly they've got talent, and I've worked with people off over in Europe, and we fly back and forth. But those are the two big competitors is what we have.
And we are talking to it does help, and just let our listeners know who may be just tuning in, we are talking to R.D. Palmer. He is a former technological professional as well as the author of the book The One, available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. It is a story that is fictional but tells us the real serious concerns we all need to have about the development of artificial general intelligence. And one of the things that you did, because we have a list of questions that I sent to you earlier, RD, but you already kind of answered them, so it's going to drop down really quickly here. And so we know how artificial intelligence can be considered superior to human intelligence, and that a lot of it has to do with speed, processing information faster than we can. I guess if I can ask a tangent question to that, does processing information really make it superior or speedier? And I say that because, and this is just the skeptic in me, not skeptical of what you're saying, just the skeptic in me, I believe we are programmed straight from the hand of God. And God, because we're programmed straight from the hand of God, even though sin created all our aberrations that we have, we're going to keep with the tech theme here. I guess my thing is I just have a huge problem with suspecting that a human brain programmed by God can ever really surpass a brain programmed by humans who are flawed. I think that's where my concerns or thoughts come in at. Go ahead and expand on that for me. And then we're going to take a couple of questions.
So I think that speed is just part of it. Actually, if you have bad data, if it's collecting a lot of bad stuff, and I'll go back to the example to where we've seen here in the United States that we've had bots that's been collecting information on the Internet, and what was happening is they were actually using sexist and racist stuff as they were responding back, okay? So, yes, they could respond back to people quickly, but it was very bad. So speed is a part of it. Now, on that speed, so I touched on this a little bit earlier. So electronic circuits, they go approximately a million times faster than a biochemical neuron, right, which is in our brain. So what we're talking about on the speed side is we're talking about a million times faster that these minds can think. And if you think about it, just in one day, if we're talking about a million times faster, so for a 24-hour period, so these machines could think, or a machine could think, essentially equivalent of 2,000 years of human thinking, right? The problem is that we need to make sure that it's not just the speed, but it's the amount of data. So the more data that we have, and this is where you probably and your listeners have heard this term, it's called big data, and certainly the company that I work for, we had that. So the more massive amount of data, then the more accurate, the higher the probability that you're going to get of right answers. So it's a combination. The speed can get there, but it's the data, and then it's to be able to analyze that data. So if I come back to what IBM had with their private debater, it's just not that you're able to recite all that information, right? And you could recite it faster than your competitor, but it's to be able to reason and to be able to position an argument to convince people. So that's what we have, and that's where we're going with that. Now, I mentioned here, I think it was 2 weeks ago again, that already in narrow intelligence, whether it be Jeopardy or chess or Go or things such as that, artificial intelligence beats hands down people, right? And if we take a look, as mentioned about a month or so ago, if we take a look at Private Debater, we have artificial intelligence that can go there too. Now, we have artificial intelligence that can even interpret and think faster. For example, when it's called Google Duplex, D-U-P-L-X, right? So it's Google Duplex. So what happens is it can speak and it can understand what you're talking about and respond back to you in nuances of ways faster than a human mind could. So we're already quite a bit on that threshold. Now, of course, there's still advancements to be made and still progress, I should say, that needs to be taken for that. But we're approaching that.
And for those of you listening to the sound of my voice, we're talking to R.D. Palmer. He is an author as well as a former technological professional working in the industry, giving us a lot of food for thought as it relates to artificial general intelligence, artificial intelligence, robots, and whether or not artificial intelligence will surpass human intelligence, which it has, and will that superiority enslave us. It's not sci-fi anymore, it's sci-fi reality. So we're talking to R.D. about that. If you want to call in, you know you can by calling in at 929-477-1965. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com or order a print issue on MagCloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@Yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. We are talking about artificial general intelligence. This is part two of our series. In this part, we're talking about the machine element. And with me to unveil and unpack this topic is R.D. Palmer. He is a former technological professional as well as author of the book The One, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And R.D., once again, thank you so much for being here with me today. I wanted to read a comment that we received from Stacy in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Stacy, in relation to our topic, says this: I'm witness to this at my day job, where we develop websites for large enterprises, and I'm the first to receive sales leads. My boss has a passion for AI and has written articles about it, but his articles aren't dispelling the need for human intelligence to develop and run AI, thankfully. I do lay eyes on some concerning info about companies developing and using AI. It's quite surprising to learn just how widely used it is already. That was a comment from Stacy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Thank you so much for your comment. Artie, you want to respond?
That's an excellent comment. So from Stacy. So what we have is that AI is ubiquitous. And when I say that, it's everywhere around us. It's in your cell phone. For example, those people that may have Amazon Alexa or Siri, you know, that AI is there. Every time that you go out and you do shopping at Amazon, there's AI that's involved in that. I mentioned on websites. This is interesting, and I'll just brief detour on Shoshana Zuboff's book, which is Capitalism, right? It's Surveillance Capitalism. And she had mentioned that it's kind of like a voodoo doll. That's not technically what it is. But so what happens is that every time that any individual goes out on the web, and so Stacy was talking about websites, what's happening is that data is being collected by you. I'm sure that anybody can go out right now and you can see the data, whether or not that you're even joined with Facebook. Facebook is collecting information, even if you're not part of it, right? So what's happening is that traffic, that data is being collected, and it's being put into AI. You don't have there's not a single individual that's looking over your shoulder and saying, oh, well, Parker is this height and this weight, and she walks this amount of time. No, but we have AI that's doing that. So it is ubiquitous, and it's even going to become more so, and I'm glad that Stacy brought this up. The reason for why it's becoming more so is because, and we were just starting to roll this out when I was getting ready to retire. It's called the Internet of Things, right? Probably have heard that term, but what that means is we're putting these smart sensors in devices. We're putting in them not only in automobiles, but we're putting them in shoes. We're going to be putting in refrigerators and toasters. So these things are going to be talking to each other, and they're going to be talking to you. They're going to be sensing, for example, that your milk is halfway empty, and that you need to, you know, we'll fill up your grocery list already. So that exists today, and it's really accelerating.
You know, you bring up when you said about these things talking to each other, you bring up an episode of The Outer Limits. The one I'm referring to is the one from 1995, and basically it was about this tower that these people could live in. This tower was fully operational by AI, and I think the AI was called Johnson or Jeeves or something like that. I don't remember. And what had happened, the holographic image was on each floor. And one lady, she needed to get medication, but she couldn't get the medication because she felt something happened, and she died. And the AI was so distressed because people can hear her screaming and asking for help, but they were so comfortable that they let her die. And so the AI took it upon itself to teach the people a lesson. And it turned itself off, and so people, they couldn't open the door, they couldn't open their refrigerator, everything was connected to this AI. And so when you mentioned that, it kind of brings that to mind. People were paying for that luxury convenience. They didn't want to be bothered with anyone. They want to go straight to their floors, straight to their homes, open a refrigerator door, hand me my, you know, everything was completely dependent on that. And so the AI had sort of values instilled into it. He said humans are not meant to live a life of ease. They're just not meant to. And that's what it came down to. So they ended up destroying the AI at the end. And so that was an episode of The Outer Limits. And so it leads to my next question about what are some reasons why artificial intelligence is being developed?
Well, we've already mentioned some of them, you know, from an economic standpoint. We mentioned military, but there's also health. You know, it's a big opportunity in health. So, for example, we've already seen on the health side to where doctors with AI, what they can do is they can reduce human diagnosis, misdiagnosis, I should say, down to 0.5. There's studies that's already based upon that. We mentioned on the sciences side that we can develop actually not only new medicines, but new chemical formulas. A couple key hot buttons, if you will, for me. So 6 years ago, so this is when I was employed, I actually wrote a white paper. I think it was only about 25 pages, so it's short. But because it was a white paper, it dealt with the technology. It dealt with who had to be involved, the governance of it. It helped with, or an outline, I should say, of how it was to be deployed, and it deals with education. So one of the things that I certainly believe, and I wrote a white paper about it, is that AI can be involved in education. And vertical, for example, that vertical could be on a history side. So in remote places around the world, you know, that where they don't have, we have the capability of, and this is 6 years ago, we have that capability even today of rolling out to where people can have the highest esteemed education. And the other part to me that I see a great opportunity for, it's not there today, but I think that we're getting close, is law. And the reason why I mentioned on the law side, and again, maybe it comes back to my personal biasness. My personal biasness is that the level, the playing field isn't level, in that when somebody does get convicted, if you have a lot of money and you can pay a lot of attorneys, you know, you can get a different type of end result as compared to somebody that's poor. But with AI, what you could have is you could have the very best attorney. You could have somebody that knows, you know, everything about that and to be able to present it. So I think that there's, you know, some reasons of why it's being developed and actually some good things that can come out of that.
And I think just balancing the good and the bad is what's really necessary, because oftentimes, and it is a genius that we can do that, that God will give us some of his communicable attributes, which is creation, whether it's art or whether it's engineering. That's a communicable attribute that God gave us, is that ability to create, that we're not solely dependent on, they're not solely dependent on not being able to create and just use what we have here. He gave us a world that we can build on. He gave us talents that we can express ourselves. And that ability to create in some level, that we can create artificial intelligence, it really is a blessing. It's a blessing. It's not something we need to look down on. That's why we're not saying, you know, let's kill all the people who have something to do with artificial intelligence, like in Transcendence, that movie Transcendence, where they killed Johnny Depp's character, and then his character became the net, essentially. He became out of the net, and then all that good stuff happened. Nothing like that, but we're talking about tempering our genius with a little bit of sense, you know, just a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit. And so we got to definitely talk about some of the end time influence on here, because one young lady, her name is Elizabeth, and Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining in the conversation. Elizabeth made a good comment, and it really does bring to mind, because one of our listeners last week asked, is the mark of the beast a artificial intelligence that takes control? And so Elizabeth made the comment that, and Elizabeth from Scottsdale, Arizona, she said, not before the rapture. So let's kind of put this, and we don't have a lot of time left, let's kind of put this in some perspective. So we got artificial intelligence that may be omnipotent, because it'd be everywhere, omniscient, maybe all-knowing. So we have that. So let's put this into context of futuristic view of end times.
Absolutely. Well, Elizabeth has got a good question. It's actually a tough question. And so it's dependent upon a lot of things, right? So in theology, it's called dispensation. So it's a timeline of events, right? And so there's some variety. There's some variety as far as when the rapture will occur, right? Pre, post, tribulation, you know, things such as that, and even if the rapture will occur. So when it comes to the artificial intelligence, and I certainly am not going to say, you know, when rapture or if rapture is going to occur, but what I'm specifically talking about is that artificial intelligence can certainly occur before a rapture, or it could occur after rapture. Either way, what's happening is that from a technology side, our focus is to build this. And then from a Christian side, I guess, is you have to look at, you know, from your personal belief, if you believe that you're going to be raptured, and then all these other people will have to deal with it. Now, I personally believe that this, again, just me personally, that we will build artificial and general intelligence, right? And I believe that, and I'm 64 years old, so I believe that unless God takes me soon, that I believe that I'll see this in my lifetime. Now, when that rapture will occur, I don't know, but I do believe that I will see an entity that has at least the intelligence and starting to surpass the intelligence of man. So what does that mean? And that actually becomes into the question is this, you know, the Antichrist? And again, it comes back into a personal belief, right? And my personal belief is that this certainly could. It has the lining up, if you will, with what I see from an eschatological framework of being able to do this. The risk that I see with what we're doing as humans in building this is that what we're doing is we're attempting to curb this, right? And so we believe that if you take a look and listen to all, and I say all, let's say very close to 100% of the people that's working on this, what they're saying is that they want to incorporate values, human values, into artificial intelligence, right? The problem with that from a philosophical standpoint and from a Christian standpoint is what's called, well, from a philosophical standpoint, it's what's called morality uncertainty, right? So you're based upon what you have decisions, you don't know which way to go. And I'll give you a simple case, right? So let's say that we do have artificial general intelligence today, and that as humans, we want to build a housing development in this one given area. But what we also have is we have a bunch of ants. Those ants live there before humans. Now, the ants are carbon-based, and the humans are carbon-based, so who has a right to that area, right? So in the past, it was, as humans, we'd just go out and obliterate the ants. We'd go bring in the bulldozers and build the houses. But that's not necessarily what's going to happen in the future with moral uncertainty, right? And then from a Christian standpoint, you know, we have to ask, what's the Christian values that we have as compared to what's worldly values? And to the best of my knowledge, there's very few people that are working on artificial intelligence that are trying to insert Christian values. So I like that question that Elizabeth had, and hopefully I've been able to address it at least partially there.
And for those of you listening, we're talking to R.D. Palmer. He's an author as well as a former technological professional, talking about artificial intelligence, artificial general intelligence, what it is, the differences, the nuances. And in this part of our series, we were talking about the machine element. So we've been spending a lot of time on the machine element, what the advances are, what this artificial intelligence can do today, what it is doing, what it's capable of. And it brings me to my question. Are we creating God, a God, with artificial general intelligence?
Well, I personally believe that we are, and the reason why I believe that we are is we're looking for an entity that will be able to provide all the answers for us. And not only the answers, for example, of our pressing needs, whether it be from an environmental side or from a military side, but also to help us from a health side. We're looking at, instead of, you know, praying for God to help us with whatever our ailments are, but we're looking for artificial intelligence to monitor our heart rates, to give us eventually in the future what, if I can even maybe specific on the cancer side. So, right, we're looking for artificial intelligence to say, hey, we're going to do away with, if it's breast cancer, we're going to do away with radiation type treatment. And what we're going to do is we're going to focus on this immune type of therapy to where we're going to change your DNA, which artificial intelligence could map out based upon the DNA that you have of how to trigger your antibiotic cells to do that. So we're in the process of looking at how we can build something that is going to be smarter than us, and then I fear that many people will look at that to be godlike. And when I say godlike, obviously more intelligence than humans, and be able to provide, if you will, benefits to humans. So there's potential by providing benefits that people would pray. And I would also say that with this AGI, that would be everywhere at the same time. So, you know, such as the Internet, right? The Internet's all around the world. So I'm not talking about a robot that is in one place. I'm talking about an entity that is everywhere at the same time. And that's actually what we're building right now. So I do believe that we're building a sort of God, Parker.
But not, of course, you can't build God in the sense of what we're talking about, but we're saying that we're building this intelligence to be it's almost as if we're building the intelligence thinking that will be subservient to us when the actual thing may be different, that will be subservient to him. And for those of you who follow end times prophecy and things of that nature,
correct,
this could be that element that we're talking about.
Correct.
But then we know that at the end of the story, which is the happily ever after, the Lord will prevail.
Correct.
And that's
excellent,
the nice thing about it. Because one thing, and I think you can agree with me on this, R.D., as we get ready to shut it down for the day till our next next episode in this series, at the end of the day, you know, I don't think it can be all-powerful. It can know things. It can be everywhere, but it's not all-powerful because only one is, and that's the Lord. He's the one who's all-powerful. But we'll be mimicking that power. And if you don't, if we're not aware of these things, then we will will be subservient to it. But that's where God comes in and changes the whole story. And so I don't want anyone to who's listening to what we're saying to be afraid, because there's nothing to fear. There truly is nothing to fear, because the Lord comes out victorious at the end. And that's the one thing we can definitely go with us. And so we talked about your book, The One, and I know you had, last week you talked about, you had some really good initial responses to it. Then earlier this week, he shared with me this glowing review of The One recently on another blog there. So the book, The One, really is what you want to pick up today. So remember to go to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold and pick up your copy, because later on this year, RD and I are going to delve into his book and really get behind the scenes of this AGI in a fictional form, just so you can truly understand what the consequences of building artificial general intelligence. Again, we're not saying we're not pro-technology. I assure you that we are. Without this technology, RD and I probably would never have met. And that's what technology is supposed to do, to help us. But it's not supposed to enslave us, nor should we be a slave to technology. So there's a balance there, I would think. There's a balance there to consider. Now, RD, if people want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
The best way is to go out to my website, which is rdpolmerbooks.com, and just go down to the comment section and comment there. So it's rdpolmerbooks, books being plural, .com. And on my website, for example, you'll also see in the menu where it says book enter, I've got several, they're one-minute snippets, if you will, from the audiobook. So you can actually listen to several different chapters from the audiobook there, too. So hopefully you'll get in touch with me. And any questions that you have, I mean, I am happy to address this. I looked at this from an AGI standpoint, which is a little bit unique. I look at it from a Christian standpoint, right? So there's a lot of people that's writing nonfiction, and I appreciate that, and I agree with their nonfiction, the books that I've read. So I quite a bit align to that. But I'm writing it from a Christian standpoint, and I'm writing to say, hey, I'm a pro-technology person, like Parker says, just saying that this is what's coming down the line, and it's just a warning for people to have their eyes open. Thank you, Parker.
Thank you, RD, so much. And next time, we're going to set a date for you guys. We're going to have the human element of AGI, because that's an important part of this discussion, because we talked about the machine element, what AGI can do, all that good stuff. What about the human element? What about you and I? Where do we fit in this discussion? Well, RD is going to tell us on the next part of our series. This is a four-part series so far called Artificial General Intelligence, the machine element, and the human element. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.